Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 17th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. So, D.R., the rebuilding efforts down in the Florida and Texas region due to those two storms that you probably already know the name of, plus efforts that are going to have to go on up in the Pacific Northwest where there are big wildfires raging. The federal government is, as I think it ought to be, duty-bound to provide support for the rebuilding of Florida and Houston. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. It goes to a point that a couple of days ago, Brad Friedman, our friend Brad Friedman, was playing mockingly the old clip of Ronald Reagan saying, you know, the worst words in the English language are "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." And Brad Friedman was knowing that in the aftermath of these severe storms, I think there are plenty of people in Texas and Florida who want the federal government to be there to help them.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So the whole political question of, you know, your hypocrisy you might have when it's someone else needs the money as opposed to when you need the money. But I guess what I have noted in the there's this evolving conversation around climate with these weather events. And it seems to me that there's more and more frank discussion that Irma and Harvey represent basically are harbingers of the future, and that, you know, get used to it. It's coming. There you go. Right. Mm-hmm. What I have not seen is a discussion around how to rebuild places like Miami or Key West or, you know, the west coast of Florida or Houston. How do we build those places in a way that is compatible with what we expect the future to be like? I mean, Houston, of course, has famously been accused of having a lot of blacktop where all of the prairies were paved over. Right. Mm-hmm. So the question is, are we just going to rebuild all that cement and do it again when the next storm hits Houston, or are we going to build a city that is sustainable? And there's a question in my mind about the distinction between, you know, building, we talked last week about building a dike around Boston or building seawalls to protect Houston versus reduction in carbon dioxide emissions, which would address the root problem. And my concern is that we are about to spend, as I said a couple of weeks ago, it looks to me like $250 billion to rebuild these places. And it seems to me this is the moment when we should be calling for that $250 billion to be spent in a way that ensures a sustainable future, both through adaptation to climate change and mitigation of climate change, as we parcel this money out. Does that sound like a reasonable thing, DR?
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, as with all things, it requires a flexing of political muscle. I think it was Rebecca Elliott that discussed the Green New Deal, as she put it, that should come out as a result of all this, where we start emphasizing the need to, you know, have a sustainable redevelopment of areas that are impacted by climate change. And, you know, it's going to require, as it all things do, a significant political mobilization, because if that mobilization does not take place, then the money that should be spent on rebuilding in a sustainable way will be attacked by opponents of such efforts as pork and, you know, the usual slurs and the usual smears. I mean, after these extreme weather events, people should, you know, the rebuilding should take place with an eye towards recognizing that the sea level is not going to magically stop rising and the storms are not going to magically stop coming. Mm-hmm. They have to be built in such a way that they can survive these extreme weather impacts. And if they're not rebuilt, then basically you're basically setting up for future disasters.
Well, and I agree. And I think that one of the people we both admire, Naomi Klein, wrote a whole book about the idea. The title of the book was The Shock Doctrine, which basically was a description, I think, of sort of moneyed conservative interests having plans ready to go, or sort of these concepts to be applied after disaster in order to push conservative kinds of ideas. And I think an example is after Hurricane Katrina, right? The first thing they came in and wanted to do, if I remember properly, was to, you know, privatize all the schools and eliminate the minimum wage in that region so that, oh, we could rebuild faster. But basically it was an implementation of conservative principles, and they had all this stuff more or less in the can ready to go. And so I guess the question is there any equivalent sort of principle that, you know, go-to principle on the green side that you can say, all right, if we're going to spend $120 billion in Houston, here's the conditions on it. Here's what ought to go with it. And be able to say that without, being seen as partisan and, you know, hijacking the aid for people, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think there's anything like that out there?
I think the most recent equivalent that I can think of is, you know, some of the money that was earmarked towards clean energy in the Recovery and Reinvestment Act in 2009, which is of course attacked by the usual suspects as pork, but it led to some really you know forward thinking investments in clean energy. Something like that has to be done, and you're right that there has to be sort of plans on the table developed so that when these disasters hit, you know, the rebuilding can be done in a sustainable and healthy way rather than in a way that sort of basically, you know, benefits a few at the expense of the many.
Well, I don't have the reference, but I was listening to the radio place, I think called Marketplace. A guy named Kai Rizdal, I think is the show. People have probably heard it. But he was talking about, I mean, even now, even today, they are rebuilding the electric grid in Florida. Right, a lot of that got knocked down. They're rebuilding it, so you got to ask the question: are they rebuilding it the same old way, or the same dumb grid that we had before Irma, or are they building it with some new smart grid technologies that can accept renewable energies and do better monitoring? I mean, one of the things that they were talking about was the concept of a microgrid, right? And I think they were saying that some of the stuff was being built in Florida, which is good, but the idea that if you have a hospital or a university or some sort of institution, right, you should be your own self-sufficient grid. It should be wired in a way that you can keep running based on either solar panels or wind turbines on your property, and that you can cut off easily from the rest of the grid so that you keep running and it's a little bit more resilient, right? I mean, ideas like that, I think, should be written into the recovery plan required, right?
I would say that in 2017, the concept of a power outage should be a foreign concept. I mean, it actually goes to another issue that Brad Friedman brought up recently, the idea of, you know, burying power lines and how utilities are resistant to that because they said, oh, it's too expensive. But of course, when a storm knocks down the power lines, look how much money they have to spend to put those power lines back up. Why not simply take this as an opportunity to put those power lines underground?
Right. There's never enough money to do that kind of stuff beforehand, but there's always enough money after the fact to do it, right? But I mean, I think for me, and this is my own sort of little hot button issue with the money that's going to be spent here to take care of Houston in Miami, is the sort of philosophical distinction between adaptation and mitigation, right? How much money do you put into protecting existing basically the idea of a seawall versus how much of that money should legitimately be put into reducing carbon pollution. I mean, it's just something to watch. But, you know, that money, right, you've heard that our orange president met with the Democrats and decided that they were going to kick everything down the road and put $15 billion, the first $15 billion into the repair and come back to it in December. And in the interim, they're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. I mean, it is an opportunity that I think green people have. And I guess I'm searching for someone with more intellectual capability and more heft to pick it up and say, here's a plan and take it to Congress or something. But until somebody talks about it, it's not going to happen, right?
Exactly.
So I guess the other interesting thing that came out of what I heard on the radio about Florida has to do, Houston and Florida had to do with this concept of resilience of cities under climate change. I mean, the under these big storms, really.
Mm-hmm.
There were two things. There was one story about a woman who was, I guess, a doctor, a specialist doctor in Houston somewhere, and somehow she found herself at a big shelter, and the only medical tent there was some aspirins and a few Band-Aids, right? And she's mm-hmm. a surgeon, so she gets and of course the Red Cross hadn't shown up yet, the big relief organizations hadn't gotten in there. She's on the ground, has some knowledge. She starts using social media to bring in supplies and doctors of people from her own personal network, and mm-hmm. how an interesting example of the way that they were able to get some medical facilities into these things very quickly because of the independent self-starter action of people on site, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I mean, that, I guess the point is, in terms of preparing for the next storm, somehow that knowledge and attitude and ability ought to be replicated so that people know that they can go ahead and do these things when the situation gets tough somewhere, right?
Exactly. Quite literally, thinking globally and acting locally.
Yeah, I mean, there was one example of how the people in Houston, the restaurants and bakeries and whatnot in Houston were stuck with all this food they couldn't get rid of, but they got on social media and found ways to transfer the stuff that was going to go bad in their buildings to the recovery centers or, you know, the shelters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this way, and again, it was fueled by social media, but then after Harvey went through, those same people were then communicating to their friends in restaurants in Miami, prepping them for what to do when Irma hit Miami, right? How mm-hmm. the restaurants should sort of coordinate so they can all come back and provide some service to the community. Again, mm-hmm. the sort of resilience against these extreme events that we need to start building into the society.
Absolutely.
I think. That's me.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know what the upshot of the whole thing is, but it is... it seems to me an important opportunity for climate hawks to try to establish principles of sustainability and under rebuilding, right? How are we going to rebuild? And I guess it's not too early to start thinking of when the next disaster hits, right? Mm-hmm. There's something in the Boston Globe about is Boston ready if Irma were to come to Boston? And of course, we're not. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But,
no.
You know, how would you rebuild Boston after a devastating flood? What would you do mm-hmm. different? Right. And who do you have to get lined up to at least be prepared to think about that? What principles mm-hmm. would you use to redesign the city?
Exactly. And how do you beat back the forces even in the supposedly blue state of Massachusetts that will caterwaul about the amount that has to be spent in terms of, resiliency and rebuilding?
Right. So, dear listener, if you're out there and you have an idea or you got a plan, the shock doctrine plan, how we're going to rebuild Houston and Miami, please send it in. All right, DR, we got to put it down there. We'll put up some links to the things we talked about on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog and on the Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can listen to this stuff directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, et cetera, and of course you can find us on iTunes. So we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you for your insight and wisdom, as always.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.